Welcome to the Shir Maral Guryari and Pashas Vos Hanan. Wanted to start off tonight sharing very interesting insight that the Maral has in terms of the division of mitzvot into different categories, and it stems from a discussion with regard to the Aseret HaDibros. We know the Aseret HaDibros are repeated in this week's Pashas Vos Hanan. They appear in Yisrael and they appear again with minor differences in Vos Hanan. So one of the things that appears in the Aseret HaDibros here is that when relating the mitzvah of Shabbos, so the pasuk says Shamor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, guard Shabbos to sanctify it. Again, a lot about Shamor versus Zacha, but we're not going to talk about that tonight. The pasuk ends off Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha, you should guard Shabbos as Hashem has commanded you. And on that phrase, Rashi writes, Kodem Matam Tzara B'mara. Right? What does it mean, guard Shabbos as Hashem has already commanded you? It means that at Mara, when the Jewish people had just left Egypt and had not even received the Torah in its entirety, God gave certain mitzvot to the Jewish people, as Rashi indicates in Parshas B'Shalach. Among those was the mitzvah of Shabbos. So that's what the pasuk means over here. Guard Shabbos as Hashem already told you back in Mara. Good, wonderful. We keep reading a few psukim later, Perek Hey, Pasuk Tezayin, and we're told again, Kadeinus Avicha V'Yasimecha, honor your father and mother, Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. Once again, the same phrase, just as Hashem has already commanded you. And here's the Rashi writes, Kasher Tzivcha, Haf Al Kibbut Avraim Nitzavu Bimara. With regard to the mitzvah of honoring parents, the Jews were also commanded to do that in Mara. They were told about Shabbos, they were also told about Kibbut Avraim. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Bishalach, Shom Somlo Choku Mishpat, there at Mara, God gave the Jewish people Choku Mishpat, different ordinances, different laws. So among those laws, thank you, were Shabbos and Kibbut Avraim. So writes Rashi in Parshas Vayechanan. Comments to Maral. Uva Parshas Bishalach, Lo kosev Rashi rak Shabbos v'dinim upara aduma. The Lo kosev Kibbut Avraim. The Maral asks a question on this Rashi. The question is already asked by the Ramban in his commentary. The Ramban doesn't give an answer to the question. He just points out it seems to be difficult on Rashi. So the question is, if you look back in Rashi and Parshas Bishalach, where it says Shom Shom Lo Choku Mishpat, in other words, the Jews were given certain laws in Mara, Rashi says the laws they were given were Shabbos, Dinin, those are the laws of adjudicating disputes and monetary laws and the like, and Parah Aduma, the laws of the red heifer. And Rashi does not mention Kibbut Avraim over there. So how do you reconcile this with Rashi? And Rashi says, and by the way, Rashi says the base of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Kaveres Avicha V'Yaseinecha Kasher Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha." Right? The pasuk seems to reference some earlier giving of the laws of Kibbut Avraim, even before Matan Torah. And yet Rashi in Parshas Bishalach, though he talks about the three other types of laws, omits any reference to Kibbut Avraim. So just there, kind of, we could mention interesting Shas of the Torah Tmima over here, and again, the Torah Tmima, as we'll see in a moment, is either famous or notorious, you know, for these kinds of Pshatim. The Torah Tmima suggested that perhaps the whole issue could be resolved based on a little bit of a textual emendation. And the Torah Tmima suggested as follows. Really, Kibbut Avraim was what was given at Mara, and the laws of Parah Aduma were not given at Mara. The earlier versions of Rashi said the Tzara Tzvima said that in Parshas Bishalach describes how God gave the laws of Shabbos, Dinim, Vav, Chaf, Aleph. Said the Tzara Tzvima, Vav, Chaf, Aleph is Rosh Hashanah for the Kibud of. However, a printer at some point made the kaf into a pay, and then someone expanded that to upara aduma, but, you know, the red heifer is really just a red herring. says the Torah to me. It doesn't say it exactly like that, but he would have if that was an expression. The red heifer is really just the red herring. It's all of that kibbutz of, and there's no contradiction whatsoever. And that, of course, also explains why on earth would the laws of Par Adum of all things being given at Mara. I mean, after all, the Jewish people didn't really have the system of Tumah V'Tara in place yet. It seems a little bit odd to give the laws of Par Adumah, which are all about Tumah V'Tara, when they didn't have a whole system of Tumah V'Tara. So that's what the Torah Tumah suggests. The whole thing is a printer's error. That's how we resolve the whole problem. This was a... I'm sorry? Yeah, but no, he would say, going back to the original Midrashim, you know, it's all a puff aleph that became a pay aleph. And Voshchanon, he makes reference to the fact that Shabbos was given and Kibbutz Av Va'Em was given. He doesn't talk about anything else that was given. But again, here is the part that says Hashem Tzidcha Hashem Elokeinu. This was a frequent approach of the Torah Tzmima. The Torah Tzmima explained many things. He answered many kashas by saying, "Oh yeah, it's a printer's error, it's a scribal error." You know, he was ready to take his pen and, you know, cross out. You know, very he was quick to cross things out. Okay, so if you're into that, those kind of answers, you know, it's an interesting answer. I think, I think the more standard approach is to assume that if we find something written in a certain way in Rashi, chances are that's what Rashi actually meant to write, and not that there was a scribal error or something of that nature, but again, it's just an interesting approach to the Torah Tumah. Okay, be that as it may. The Maral himself, however, answers in a different fashion, very, very different fashion, to answer this kasha, which ultimately is the kasha of the Rambam. The Yesh Lomar, the El Siv, Shom Shom Lo Choku Mishkot V'Shom Nisahu. Keep reading the Pasuk in B'Shalach. There, at Mara, Hashem gave these laws, V'Shom Nisahu. And there, Hashem tested the Jewish people. What does that mean? Pirish Nisahu La'am in the Elchul B'Sarasha. In other words, God tested the Jewish people at Mara to see whether they would follow the Torah, the little Torah that had been given, and these mitzvahs. Right? In other words, there's an element of testing the metal of the Jewish people. When it comes to Kibbutz Av Va'Em, says the Maral, fascinatingly, the concept of a nisayon, of a test, doesn't apply. It doesn't test us to give us a mitzvah of kibud of va'ein. Why? Lefisha adam osu b'teva l'chabed of va'ein. A person's natural inclination is to honor his or her parents. Ve'heimi amitzvos hativios she'adam osu u'mekayim b'teva. It's just natural for a person to want and to go ahead and honor his or her parents. It's not a nisayon. It's not something that puts us to the test. So in other words, says the Maral, really there were four mitzvot that were given at Mara. Shabbos, Dinin, Par Adum, and Kibbutz Av Va'Em. How come Rashi and B'Shalach doesn't mention Kibbutz Av Va'Em? The answer is, because, you know, Rashi is fitting it into the Pasuk in B'Shalach. Sham Sham Lo Choku Mishpat, V'Sham Nisahu. Right? God gave these laws as an nisayon, as a test. Well, Kibbutz Av Va'Em was given as a law, but it's not a test, because it's so intuitive and so natural to want to honor one's parents that one can't say that one is put to the test in doing so. L'fikach lo pirish l'mal Kibbutz Av Va'Em she'ez a nisayon, avo Shabbos u'par aduma v'dinim shayich kol nisayon. So a couple of things on this very, very interesting idea from the Maral. So first of all, it does kind of work well with Rashi over here. And again, without the Maral, I don't know if I would have said this in Rashi, but it does work nicely once you know the Maral. Rashi over here says, Kibbutz Av Va'Em was given in Mara, Shenemah, Shom Shom Lo Chok U'Mishpot. Period. Rashi, in Va'eshanam, does not quote the last two words of the Pasuk, Mishom Nisahu. According to... Again, if you didn't know the Maral, you would say, okay, so he quoted the part of the Pasuk that says that God gave laws to the Jewish people at Mara. That's all we need to quote. But according to the Maral, Rashi's omission of the last two words in the pasuk, "Visham Niso," is deliberate, because the concept of the Nisayon simply is not relevant, you know, when it comes to the Kibbutz of Va'en. Okay, so that's just on a very, very technical level. But to talk on a more conceptual level about the Maharal, L'chora, one has a tremendous kasha on this Maharal, A, from the Gemara, but B, just from human experience. What do you mean? It's not a Nisayon to follow the mitzvah of Kibbutz of Va'en? I mean, the Gemara quotes in Kiddushin from Abaye, who says that he felt that he was fortunate on some level that his parents had passed away either before his birth, in the case of his father, or shortly after his birth, in the case of his mother, because that way he didn't have the burden of this almost impossible to fulfill mitzvah of Kibbutz of Va'en. Tosfos there in Kiddushin brings from the Talmud Yerushalmi that describes how the Tanna of Tarfon went to extraordinary lengths to engage in Kibbutz Ein, and the Chachamim, you know, when his mother was talking about the greatness of her son and the lengths to which he went to be Mekayim Kibbutz Ein properly, the Chachamim told, you know, the mother of Tarfon, he hasn't even done half of what the Torah requires in terms of Kibbutz of Ein. The Kibbutz of Aim is an incredibly difficult and demanding mitzvah. I mean, that's just Makaros from Chazal that's talking in that vein. And you know, then when we just talk about life experience, you go to people and you say, you know, is it true that there's no Nisayon whatsoever to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibbutz of Aim? We took a poll. I think the average, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who'd say, yeah, sure, that's a cinch. What an easy mitzvah. I just, you know, not a Nisayon, there's no Yetzer whatsoever for a person not to be Mekayim Kibbutz of Va'en. So, what does the Maharal mean? Well, what does he mean that there's no Nisayon with regard to Kibbutz of Va'en? So, I think perhaps what the Maharal means is as follows. Avada, as the Gemara says, in practice, it can be, and it generally is, a tremendous Nisayon to carry out Kibbutz of Va'en properly. What the Maharal, I think, means is that the average, reasonable, rational person recognizes that it's a mitzvah which makes sense. In other words, it's a mitzvah which one naturally accepts and understands should be a mitzvah. Because there's very few people in the world that if you go to them and say, look, in theory, do you think it makes sense to honor one's parents? Or do you think it doesn't make sense to honor one's parents? Rare indeed would be the person who would say, I can't understand why the Torah would tell us to honor one's parents. And that just makes no sense to me whatsoever. Right? Now, there's a certain basic intuitive idea that one has to honor parents, and even though we may find it hard to carry out in practice all the time, certainly a person's teva, a person's natural inclination, is to want to honor one's parents. So yeah, we fall short. You know, there's times where it's difficult because of a specific set of circumstances, but very few people would tell you, I can't imagine why there'd be such a mitzvah. It's not a Nisayon to accept the concept, the principle of the mitzvah. Maybe a Nisayon, and even a tremendous Nisayon to carry out the mitzvah. But what's that? So we'll see. We'll get to the difference, what he sees as being the difference between Dinim and Kibbutz of Va'en. In other words, but again, the way we're suggesting, it's rare that a person would say, I don't want to be mechaved my parents. Okay, I want to be mechaved my parents, but in actuality I fall short. But you know, that surrogate, that natural desire to say this is a good thing, this is something I want to do, that isn't really considered to be any sign.
No, I just
want
to support that. You see, even the material that even people will fry and wouldn't cure the garden in many, many ways. A lot of them, if they have appearance that's a good person, that's a healing, that's good at a parenting job, that the person, he was hoping that I want very much, well, naturally, have a tendency to want to respect
him,
to care about him.
Right. So let me build on that a little bit. There's an interesting tshuva from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe doesn't cite this Maharal, but I think the idea of the Maharal goes hand in hand with the tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe was asked the question about a woman who had been Megaya, a woman who had converted, and really had not kept up any relationship with her non-Jewish mother. Now the non-Jewish mother was elderly, she was in the hospital, and the convert wanted to know, was it appropriate for her to tend to her needs, to visit her, to take care of her and the like? She was a little nervous spending a lot of time around the mother. She didn't want to expose her children to the mother. Apparently, they really had not had a relationship at all. Was this appropriate or is it inappropriate? And Rav Moshe writes back, of course it's appropriate that you should, you should go and take care of your mother. I, halachically, gershon esayer katinah shenolad dami, that when a person converts, halachically, they no longer have a halachic connection to their parents. So says Rav Moshe, okay, that's true in a pure halachic sense, but lemaisa, this is the person who brought you into the world. And even if you don't have a mitzvah of kibud av va'em in the formal sense of the term, there's a concept of hakarat hatov, there's a concept of gratitude, and gratitude is something which is incumbent even upon, non-Jews. Even a non-Jewish child to a non-Jewish parent, there's a concept, maybe not of kibud av va'em in the formal sense, but of hakarat hatov. You have to show gratitude to the people who brought you into the world. And that's a basic concept. But that idea that Rav Moshe brings up, that just intuitively children should show gratitude towards parents, even so to speak, without the formal structure of Kibbutz Avraham. Okay, so Kibbutz Avraham dictates certain specific actions. Don't sit in the person's place. Don't contradict their words. Bring them food. Bring them drink. There's certain specific things that are done as part of Kibbutz Avraham, Mora Avraham, those mitzvahs. Maybe there isn't a specific obligation to do those things outside of the Jewish context, but, to show a special kind of respect to your parents, just because they brought you into the world, that's a concept that applies to non-Jews as well, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. So, this I think fits in with the Maharal. Well, the Maharal is saying that the notion of kibud av va'em is a mitzvah which one almost depends on by one's natural instincts, is drawn to show respect to one's parents, not just that it's logical, it's also it's instinctual. The person has a natural instinct to want to do these sort of things. And in that sense, it may be an isayon to carry it out, but it's certainly not an isayon to accept, the principle of being committed to such a mitzvah. So the Maharal continues with this idea as follows. Yesh lomer, l'chach nosan lahem Shabbos upara aduma v'kibud av va'em. The Maharal raises the question, now that we've granted that all four of these mitzvot were given at Mara, one can raise the question, why davka these four? What is it about Shabbos, dinim, para aduma, and kibud av va'em that, make them special, that they were given to the Jewish people, even before Matan Torah? So, adjudicating disputes and things like that. So he first suggests a little bit of a technical reason, and then he goes on to give this reason, which I think is just, this is where he's aiming at a very, very fundamental idea. Kashir Rosa Losei Sohem Mitzvah Mitzvah. Being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the Jewish people at Mara a smattering of mitzvot, like a sample of some of the mitzvot, Nafsan Lahem Eilu mitzvot, he gave them these four mitzvot, Shemitzvot HaTorah Nechlokim La'arboch HaLokim. Because we should know in general, says the Maharal, the mitzvot of the Torah can be divided up into four different types. There are four types of mitzvot. Now, again, we know that there's a distinction between chukim and mishpatim, which already Chazal talk about, mitzvahs which we understand versus mitzvahs which we don't understand. So the Maharal takes that basic idea and he subdivides chukim and mishpatim each into two further subcategories. You end up with four categories altogether. Category number one, Tishain Tam Shalah Nigla Klau. Lo Yuchal Ha'odam Lodash Klau, Kimo Paraduma, Shatnez, Sahare Mitzvah Shein Chukim. There are certain mitzvahs which we just totally don't understand. Why do we do Paraduma? I don't know. Why do we have Shatnez? I don't know. Right? So that's one category of mitzvahs, pure Chukim. The Yesh mitzvahs, Shetamom Yodua Kasher Nichtuvu Bat Torah, Kimo Shabbos Utfilin, However, there's a second type of mitzvot which is sort of like chukim, but sort of not. There are mitzvot which are not intuitive, and I wouldn't have come up with these mitzvot on my own, and, you know, certainly I would not have figured out the reason for these mitzvot on my own. However, the Torah itself tells me the reasons for these mitzvot. And now that the Torah has told me the reason, now I understand at least why the Torah is giving me these mitzvot. Mitzvot Eilu Nikroi Mikubolos. These are mitzvot which in the Maral terms are received mitzvot. Shem Mikubolam Esleinu Kimiti Moshe. We receive these mitzvot from Moshe, we receive their explanation, but they're not intuitive. I mean, we would not intuit to keep Shabbos. Right? We would not intuit to put on tefillin. Right, the average person would not wake up one morning without a Torah and just say, you know what, I should put on tefillin. Put on tefillin, I just dream, you know, black boxes, Pisces, you know. You're not going to figure that out on your own. But now that the Torah told us why we do it, that the tefillin is a way of binding ourselves to the, you know, existence of Torah and to the commitments of Torah, you know, tefillin is certainly not a mitzvah like Par Azuma. It's not a mitzvah whose explanation, you know, whose existence defies explanation. But it's not an intuitive mitzvah either. That's the second category, says the Maharal. Call it chukim prime. It's not exactly a chok, but it's not exactly a mishpat either. Hashlishe and mitzvah hamuskolos kigon dinim. Then there are mitzvahs which are intuitive and which make sense to our minds. Look, we understand why there need to be courts. We understand why there need to be monetary laws. We may not, you know, intuit all the details, but we certainly understand. It certainly makes sense to us intuitively that if I lend you money, you have to pay me back at some point. I mean, on a certain level, we don't need the Torah to tell us that, right? That's sort of basic. Now, the one who borrows the money, let's put it this way, is usually not itching to pay it back, right? And as he wakes up in the morning, he says, oh, there's nothing I'd rather do than, you know, just fork over the $100 that I borrowed, right? He doesn't have a taiva to do it, but he understands that it's the right thing to do. Right? So that's the third category. Elo amitzvos einikroim mitzvos hamuskolos. These are mitzvos which are understood and which are intuitive. Hamin ha-revi mitzvos hativios. But then there's the fourth category, says the Maharal. Mitzvos which he calls natural mitzvos. Shechofe fa'adam l'kayim b'teva. These are mitzvos that a person naturally has an inclination to do. Not just that he understands intellectually that they're the right thing to do, but God made the human being in such a way that he wants to do these mitzvos. Kigon kibud avoim. Kibravim would be a primary example. As the Maral himself said, there's a natural inclination for a person to want to show gratitude to his parents. The other mitzvot, which speak to the natural idea of compassion, it's natural, says, you know, the Maral implies, that our Hartman speaks this out in the notes, it's natural for a person to want to give tzedakah to a person who's poor. Right? You see somebody who's destitute, who's struggling, you know, and you're not a cynical person, it's natural to want to help that person out. You know, there's charity is an idea that exists even outside of the context of Torah mitzvahs, right? The amount, you know, the way in which you give it, okay, some of those are uniquely Jewish ideas, but the concept of charity is a universal concept. We help the people who need help. And there's a basic human inclination to want to help people who need help. Those kinds of mitzvahs which a person does because he feels naturally drawn to those kind of mitzvahs, That's the fourth type. That's Mishpatim Prime. That's what he calls Tivios. Mitzvot that a person by his nature wants to do. The Raya Shetimsa after the Hema Rachmanus. Shina Rachemes as Vlada. Even in the animal world, says the Maharal, there's a concept of mercy. Animals show mercy for their own children. It's not even a human concept. The mystic just concretizes a basic inclination that we have to show mercy and, you know, to show gratitude towards our parents. I'm sorry? Or? Right. So I think he's saying that humans are built with a similar instinct, and the mitzvah takes that instinct and just, you know, shapes it. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's suggesting that mercy is something which we have instinctively. Right? That's a basic human trait to have mercy. Again, the application of that may vary. Not everybody's going to be merciful, but the average person has Rachmanus to some degree or another. So Mimela, a mitzvah that's based on Rachmanus or that expresses Rachmanus is going to be almost a natural mitzvah. Goes on to my route to explain, as you can, you know, as you can imagine, the four mitzvahs given at Mara represent, each one is representative of one of these four categories. Right? Parah Aduma, the ultimate chok. Shabbos, a mitzvah which is not intuitive, but, you know, whose idea and concept was revealed to us, and we can understand it now that it was revealed to us. Dinim, something which we intellectually appreciate, even if we don't have an inclination to follow it, right? I mean, we're not inclined naturally to, you know, to always do what's right monetarily, but we certainly appreciate intellectually that it's the right thing to do. And then the mitzvos rachmanios, the mitzvos which speak to a basic nature which we possess, in this case, the attribute of mercy, and they take that mitzvah, that instinct, the instinctual mitzvah, and they just, you know, raise it to the level of an actual mitzvah. These are four types of mitzvahs, and by giving these four specific mitzvahs at Mara, God was basically prepping the Jewish people for what a life of Torah would be like. These are four representatives of the four different types of mitzvahs which we have in Yiddishkeit. Oh, so in what the Maral then repeats, this is the idea that he said at the outset. Rashi didn't mention the fourth category back in B'Shalach because the words V'Sham Nisahu, God tested the Jewish people through these mitzvahs, doesn't apply to that fourth category. The other three categories are a nisayon. It's a nisayon to follow God's will with the other three categories. Not so, he claims, with the tibios. However, you know, all four categories were revealed at Sina, at Mara, and they were all four representatives of the kind of mitzvahs that the Jews would ultimately be given. The Maral concludes his discussion of this topic with the two words, the hakol nochon. Everything I said is firm and established and correct. You know, he feels very strongly about these quadrants, you know, the division of the Torah mitzvahs into these four different categories. That's what we'll pick up at tonight. It's another beautiful insight from the Maral, and we will see everybody there. Welcome to the second half of the Shir Maral Gurari Yitashas Bos Hanan. So, after revealing the Aseret HaDibros, so the parasha says Perkei Pasuk Yutes Es Hadvarim Ha'Ela Dibra Hashem Kol Ka'alchem Bahar Mitzal Ha'esh Anan Bar Rafael. These words Hashem spoke to the entire community on the mountain, out of the fire, the cloud, the darkness. Kol Gogo, it was a great voice. Velo Yosef. What does Velo Yosef mean? So Rashi writes, "Velo Yosef Mitargamin and Velo Pasak." The Targum Onkelos translates "Velo Yosef" as he did not stop. Now, the two ways, as Rashi indicates back in Parshas Baloscha, to understand the "Velo Yosef," you can understand "Velo Yosef" as he did not stop, or he did not add In other words, you know, the two explanations are actually diametrically opposed to one another. Filo Yosef could be understood as Filo Hosef, you know, in other words, which on a certain level might be the simple interpretation of the post. God said all of these words at Har Sinai in a great voice, Filo Yosef, and he didn't add anything else. In other words, this was it. This was the entirety of what he said. Rashi over here does not even bring that as a possibility. Rashi doesn't even bring that as an interpretation. The Targuminim Filo Hosef, the Targum says that it did not, the sound, the voice of Hashem did not stop. Ki kolo chazak v'kayam le'olam. Because God's voice, Kaviyachol, is strong and everlasting. That's beautiful. But what on earth does that mean in reality? In other words, the simple pshat in Rashi is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice rang out at Har Sinai to tell us the Aseret HaDibro, and it never stopped. So, l'chora, we should still be hearing it. I mean, what does that mean? If you got close enough to, if we knew where Har Sinai was, we got close enough, we still hear the Kol Hashem? What does that mean? Again, just on the simplest of levels. You know, it sounds beautiful, but what does that mean? Kol Gadol V'lo Yosef. So the Maral writes, very, very succinctly, but beautifully, in Talmud, in Peyusha Shekosu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shehayu Bar Sinai, also Kol Chosok V'Kayim Le'olam, if the interpretation is that the voice of Hashem that was projected at Har Sinai is still there, and in fact is everlasting, Lama Tzorich recalls that. So why would we, what is the point of that call? What is the point of that sound, that voice, which seems to be miraculously emanating to this day? And again, what does it mean altogether? In Bala Hagir Shekola Chazak Tishir Shuladadir, if what Rashi means to say is that Hashem's voice is incredibly strong, it can be as strong as it was at Har Sinai when God chooses to utilize His voice in such a manner. So that's not really what it's saying. Lo Yosef means it never stopped, not that it has the potential for being as strong again as in the future. So just pause it. What does Rashi mean? Yishloma. Yeah. Yesh lo mar, the kolo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo bo bishvil tzuras ha'kel. When the Pesuk in Rashi here refers to God's kol, to God's voice, it doesn't mean a physical voice that we're hearing. The no mar bezeh shehoya ve'osa shor v'lo achar kach. You know, to say that, you know, the voice was then, and but it stopped obviously because we're not hearing the voice anymore. When the Pesuk here speaks of God's call, of God's voice, you know, it means the influence of Torah that comes about through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is having an influence in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is called by the Pesuk in Tehillim the Mekar Chayim, the source of life. God is constantly being mashpia. He's constantly influencing and exerting an influence on the world around us. Right? So, in other words, the call is that influence of the Torah. The influence of the Torah did not stop since that fateful day at Har Sinai. Rachos, the Shah, is not in Korali Yisrael, Kedeva Kabbalah Shefa, Shaladibur, Ashahayu Kulah, the Madrega Panadim. What happened at Har Sinai? HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that moment, again, in the beautiful words of the Maral, hewed out ears for the Jewish people to be able to experience that hashpah, that influence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if they were all Nevi'im at that time. But even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu then subsequently took away the ability of the Jewish people to have that kind of experience, Cholosho HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashvi'a Mi'ito HaKachma Tamid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kol, as it were, his voice, quote-unquote, is always spreading and disseminating chokhma, the divine wisdom, throughout the world from that time on. The zehu lo yosef, and that's what the pasuk means, it never stops. Ki etzlo ein shinui. nothing changed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. He was giving over the Torah to Har Sinai, and he continues to give over the Torah continuously to this very moment. It's only we, the receivers, the recipients of Torah, who are, you know, our ability to pick up this voice has been impaired since Matan Torah. When the Targum Onkelos over here in Rashi describes God's voice as being strong forever, it means, yes, the hashpah of Torah, the influence of Torah, is something everlasting. We may not experience that to the same degree that we did at Har Sinai, but realize that the radio waves are out there. If we just know how to tune the radio, you know, in order to be able to pick up the waves and to, you know, to understand what the hashpah of Torah is telling us. Rabbi Hartman in his notes, he quotes the Maral and Tiferes Yisrael, but the Maral makes a similar point about how God is called the Nosein HaTorah, the giver of Torah. Nosein is present tense, right? Not the Nosein HaTorah, right? But he's the Nosein HaTorah. He is giving us the Torah in a constant sense, right? In other words, the ability to absorb the Chokhmah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is something which is always out there. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always sharing with us. We just have to open ourselves up, you know, to be able to receive it. That's the Kol Gadol V'lo Yosof. You know, it's a voice which is still there, which is still giving forth that Hashkah. You know, it hasn't stopped at any particular time. I just want to mention this, the Maral, which is worth looking at. I'm not going to look at it inside, but there's a very fascinating Maral on this parsha, on the pasuk V'shinantan Levanecha that we have in Kriyat Shema, where the Maral goes off on a tirade, for lack of a better term, about the educational system that prevailed at his time. This is the Maral where he talks about this idea in several different places, but he mentions it on Chumash. Basically, the Maral was very opposed to the system which prevailed at his time, and arguably maybe still prevails in our time, that kids would be taught a little bit of Chumash, and then almost immediately as young children, he talks about children at the age of 8 and 9, they would be exposed to Gemara learning and Tosfos, and the Maral writes, they're too immature at that point to be learning things on such a high level. Better to spend the time filling them up with a good knowledge of Tanakh and Mishnayos as basics, so that when they get to be older, they can learn Gemara properly and really, you know, understand it. Otherwise, that's what he's saying. So, you know, otherwise you're doing something that looks impressive. Oh, the kid gets the Gemara. Oh, the kid gets the Tosfos. Okay, very nice. But the kid doesn't know the basic facts, you know, that are necessary. He speaks out, among other things, against the practice, which, again, some Chazarim they still do today, of, you know, not learning Chumash straight, but only learning Parshas HaShavua. So, you know, the kids do a little bit of Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis. They do a little bit of Noach, Parshas Noach. They never quite find out whether the rain ever stopped. All of a sudden, they're in Parshas Lech Lecha. And, you know, the Maral describes that was an educational system that existed in his own day. And he says it's terrible because you don't actually learn, you know, you feel like, okay, we're learning Parshas HaShavua, but you never actually learn the Chumash. In other words, you know, and Nevi'im Ketuvim, forget about them. Mishnayos, forget about them. You know, says the Maral, you have to learn basics. You know, and learn the basics well. As the Pasuk says, Vishnantam Levanecha, you should teach Torah in such a way that the words of Torah, Lo Yiyu Megungamim B'Ficha, you know, you shouldn't sort of know Torah, you should really know Torah. And, you know, the educational system at that time, the Maral felt, was really not, you know, addressing that in an adequate way. It's worthwhile looking inside, you know, where the Maral really talks at length. He says, I wasn't really going to talk about this, but I feel I have to, you know, in the context of this discussion. Well, the truth is, Dafyomi exposes you to all of Shas. And I think that the Maral was talking over here about, you know, just see a lot of material, see a lot of fakirs, you know. Right. So I don't know, I mean, again, I'll say one thing about Dafyomi, even though they're critics of Dafyomi. There are a lot of people who are learning Daf Yomi who would not be learning anything. So, you know, if somebody poses the question, should I be learning Daf Yomi, or should I learn something a little bit more in depth, or more slowly, or whatever? That's a legitimate question. If the question, however, is, should I be learning Daf Yomi, should I be learning nothing? I think anyone responsible would say, you know, Daf Yomi is the better of the two options here. What's that? Well, for some people, Lamaisa, it is the question. For some people, Lamaisa, it is the question. You know, in other words, you know, I'll do Daf Yomi. There's something effective about being able to just to adapt every day and make shiurim and something like that. And if I'm not going to do Daf Yomi, I'm not going to do anything. I mean, that's Lamaisa. There's a lot of people that is the case. You know, again, is it for everybody? No, not necessarily. I mean, but you know, it's certainly it's far better than not doing anything at all. You know, that's for sure. Okay, we'll pick up next week. Guys, I shall take care.